It's my great pleasure to introduce our first keynote speaker, a very esteemed colleague. Dr. Gottlieb is a doctorate prepared nurse and is professor at the McGill University Ingram School of Nursing and is the nurse scholar in residence at the Jewish General Hospital. She served as director of the McGill School of Nursing from 1995 to 2001. She is editor emeritus of the Canadian Journal of Nursing Research. Throughout her career, she received numerous prestigious awards. She received a Centennial Award from the Canadian Nurses Association, recognizing the 100 most influential nurses in Canada. Elle a été décorée de l'insigne du mérite de l'Ordre des infirmiers et infirmières du Québec et du prix du Conseil interprofessionnel du Québec. She has written several books, and the theme of her most recent book is the focus of today's conference. Today, she will entertain us on strength-based nursing, building on the past, creating the future. Please join me in welcoming a woman of passion, a woman of vision, Dr. Laurie Gottlieb.
A woman of passion than anything. Okay, bienvenue. Welcome to this inaugural conference on strengths-based nursing. Je suis très heureuse de voir tout ce monde réuni ici qui veulent en savoir plus sur les soins infirmiers fondés sur les forces. La raison pour laquelle cette approche est si appréciée parmi nous, c'est qu'elle incarne l'essence même de ce que font des infirmières et ce que la profession offre. Strengths-based nursing is resonating, and it's resonating with so many because it has captured the best of what nurses do and the best of what nursing has to offer. I want to begin by thanking my incredibly esteemed colleagues. I'm so delighted to be joined by my friends, Dr. Patricia Benner and Dr. Judith Shamian, who have been the early champions of this approach. When I asked them to read early drafts of the book, their enthusiasm caught me by surprise, and their incredible support during this period has meant so much to me. And so when I asked them to join me for this inaugural conference, there was no hesitation. So I can thank both these wonderful nurses, nurses extraordinaires, that have joined me in this endeavor. Now, I would like to spend the next hour thanking all those people who have joined me on my journey. But then you wouldn't hear anything about strengths-based nursing. So I think I'm going to pass. Know that each and every one of you has played a very significant role in my journey, and you have all been a very important part of my personal and professional life. The only person I will mention will be the one person who has accompanied me on my journey even before my birth, and this is the truth. I have known her longer than anyone else in this room, and that is my twin sister. So you can't get closer than twin sister. And so I thank my twin sister, Dr. Linda Gottlieb. We were born Richler, but Dr. Linda Switkin, who has joined us today, and my friend Deanna, who came from Toronto. In this next hour, I will be talking about how strengths-based nursing builds on the past. I will talk about why strengths-based nursing's time has come and why the healthcare system and nursing need strengths-based nursing. And I'm going to talk about some of the core features that define strengths-based nursing. Now, many of these ideas will sound very familiar to you, and that is because they are. Many of you are practicing strengths-based nursing, or at least elements of it. And you might not have labeled it as such, but hopefully you will do so, and you'll recognize what you're doing is a strengths-based idea or a strengths-based move. Now, other elements will not sound so familiar. And it's my hope that this afternoon, at the end of this conference, you will all feel inspired, energized, motivated, and want to learn more about what strengths-based nursing is and how one could take these ideas into your own world of practice, education, and administration. But before I get started, I just want to remind you, what is nursing social contract? We tend to forget why we're here and what we're doing. Now, every profession has a social contract, and that's the contract they make with society. That social contract outlines the obligations and the responsibilities that that profession has agreed to fulfill. And in exchange, society accords that profession a certain degree of recognition and special status. So we need to ask ourselves, what is nursing's social contract? A nursing social contract was formulated by Florence Nightingale, the founder of modern secular nursing. And her notion of nursing's obligations and responsibilities was the care of the healthy being helping people to become the full people they are, as well as care of the sick. And nurses needed to acquire specialized knowledge and skills in order to promote health, to create conditions for the person to self-heal and to alleviate suffering. And so the next question we have to ask ourselves is how do professionals fulfill their social contract? Now the answer is many, but I'll give you the one that I believe is the strongest. The way a profession fulfills its contract, it depends upon what that person thinks is nursing, what he carries on or she carries on in her head, and that's known as their framework. What she thinks nursing is, what she thinks how nursing should fulfill that role, and then those ideas become her lens through which she sees the world. And in this framework, once you have your framework, it then directs you to what type of knowledge you need to acquire, what type of competence you need to develop, what should be your attitude, and what set of skills. So now I'd like to briefly spend a little bit of time talking about what are some of the underpinnings of strengths-based care and how it builds on the past. Now I have spent most of my career at McGill University, and so without having been at McGill University, I am not sure that I would have ever been able to write strengths-based nursing. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the evolution of strengths-based nursing quite briefly. Now in this very famous quote that I'm sure all of you are familiar with, Isaac Newton, the famed 17th century English physicist and mathematician, wrote, "If I have seen further than others, it is by standing upon the shoulder of giants." And I have stood on many shoulders of many giants, and I would just like to introduce you to a few of those giants and their shoulders. Now, McGill University School of Nursing is the second oldest university in Canada, founded in 1920. That's close to 94 years ago. And it began with the lady to your right, Flora Madeline Shaw, who believed in a university education for nurses. The next big giant was Ray Chittick, and she believed that nurses, their role was to understand the human condition, because it was the human condition that we were working with. And that knowledge came from a broad areas of subjects, including English literature, the humanities, included philosophy, included psychology, sociology, as well as the biological sciences. And then there was Elizabeth Logan pretty lady, who was the director when I started McGill in the 1960s, and she believed that patients were our best teachers. And the way we learned from patients was by observing what they were going through and being fully present in their lives. And then there was Joan Gilchrist, that many of you still might remember, and she was the first person who started the Joint Academic program that broke down the silos between university and between education and service, because she believed that we each had a role to play in enhancing each other's mandates. But the one who influenced them all, and the one who I identify the most with, is Bertha Harmer. Bertha Harmer was a second director of the School of Nursing who came to McGill from Yale University, and she wrote two very influential books in the 1920s. One of them was called Methods and Principles of Teaching, The Principles and Practices of Nursing, and the textbook of the Principles and Practices of Nursing that became the classic in the field. And she brought those books with her when she became the director of nursing at McGill in 1928. And if anyone read those books, and I have, there you will find the kernels of strengths-based nursing and its underpinnings there. Now, the next big development that really underpins strengths-based nursing, and many of you have heard of Dr. Maura Allen, and it's during the 1970s when both Canadian and American nurses began to debate which direction nursing should expand their role into. And some argued quite vociferously that we should be moving more into medical functions, taking over some of the functions that doctors no longer were interested in doing, as they became more specialized, or we should forge an independent role for ourselves in the area of family health. And Dr. Allen was a proponent of the latter. And what she did, and which was very critical, was that she labeled McGill School of Nursing's ideas about nursing and how they differed from other nursing models at the time whose underpinnings were more the medical model. And she called her nursing situation-responsive nursing or complemental nursing, because it would complement that of medicine. And she differentiated these two approaches along seven dimensions. And one of the dimensions was strengths versus deficits, where she believed that nurses in planning care worked with patients' strengths and not with their deficits. And this is the first mention of the word strengths in any nursing model. Once these seven dimensions had been clearly articulated, teachers within the School of Nursing, and I was one at the time, we began to revise our curriculum. And these ideas then became part of the curriculum. But at the time, there was very little meat on the bones. And so our practitioners went into clinical settings, and they began to experiment, innovate, and discover what it meant to work with patient strengths. What did that look like? And everyone came out and developed their own ideas and construct about this. And in 1980, Dr. Allen retired, left McGill, and in 1985, Evelyn Maloney, being a very important nursing leader, director of the Mentor Children's Hospital, where was the hotbed of great experimentation, approached me, and we decided that we would have a first conference on, and when now we had changed the name from Situation Responsive Nursing to the McGill Model of Nursing. And the reason that name was changed was to reflect the contributions of past thinkers and current thinkers and their discoveries. So it would be an all-encompassing concept that really took in a whole community who had contributed to these ideas. The next stage and the next development of these ideas, and any model, any theory, any framework is a living organism and should constantly be developed and evolve. I was teaching a course called Development Over the Lifespan with my husband Bruce Gottlieb. He's a geneticist. I have a background obviously in nursing, but also a PhD in developmental psychology before we had a nursing doctoral program. And so we developed the developmental health framework to provide a more comprehensive understanding of what it meant to work with a person, the environment, health, and nursing. I had begun to reread Nightingale and believed nursing was losing its way. And what was needed was a reconnection to Nightingale and Nightingale's vision of what nursing's role was. And when Nightingale said, "Nurse's role is to put the patient in the best condition to allow nature to heal it," we then had to understand what were these laws of nature, and I believe they were grounded in both the biological, developmental, and human sciences, what were these laws of nature that we needed to understand in order to be able to help patients in their own self-healing. Now that statement of putting the patient in the best condition to allow nature to heal it recognizes that there are innate capacities for healing and innate capacities for health. And so Nightingale is dubbed the first strengths-based nurse. And so the strengths-based nursing really has been almost 100 years in the making, older than me. It has evolved from Bertha Harmer's thinking of the principles and practices of nursing to situation-responsive nursing, to the McGill model of nursing, and now to the developmental health framework. It's not a model per se. I call it more of an approach that is value-driven, but gives nursing a comprehensive framework from which to describe their practice and a new language that really resonates with clinicians. And it's these things which I think are really important. So now the question is, why do we need strengths-based nursing, and why is this the time that strengths-based nursing has come? And I believe there's a need to reclaim nursing and to transform the healthcare system. And it's just not me that's asking for that. It's many people who are recognizing both the strengths and some of the incredible weaknesses within the two. And the reclaiming of nursing is not unrelated to the need to transform healthcare. And I believe if nursing reclaims itself, we might be transforming healthcare. So let's look at some of the indicators why this is needed. Now, on my way home from a visit to my grandchildren, whenever I'm working on something, I see everything through that lens. I was listening to an interview with Mario Cuomo, who's governor of New York, and he was talking about the state of New York politics. And this is what he said. The further you get away from your essence, the deeper the trouble you're in. The further you get away from your essence, the deeper the trouble you are in. And I quickly grabbed a pencil and wrote that down because I thought this resonated with me because I felt it captured a sentence of what I believe is some of the problems with nursing. Now, the first indicator that we need to transform healthcare is that many have complained that our healthcare system is neither healthy nor a caring system. Our healthcare system, we know, is a misnomer. It is a disease system, not a health system. And there's very little money that is expended towards primary care, health, and health promotion. We know our system, anyone who's been a patient in the system, can be fragmented, more or less, depending upon which system we're in. It can be very depersonalized when people are often treated as objects. And the major driver all too often seems to be the bottom line, run by the MBAs, with less consideration for the person and the family, despite being told that we're person and family-centered. Another indicator for me that something is amiss is that nurses suffer from role confusion and some self-esteem issues. In fact, I was giving a talk just about a week ago or two weeks ago to a big association when a nurse got up and said to me, "I really don't know what nursing is." And I said, "And how long have you been practicing nursing?" And she said, 8 years. I said, "In 8 years, you don't know what nursing is, what your work has been?" And then I realized that she's one of many who practice nursing as a set of technical activities and tasks, divorced from any concept of nursing and what she is trying to achieve. Now, what she should really be practicing nursing as, a set of relational, moral, social activities with a technical base. Because at the end of the day, nursing is a relationship profession, and that's what really makes a difference. And we have so much evidence now from neurobiology of the power of relationships and how, if that becomes a center, using that in conjunction with working with a technical, highly technical base. Another indicator that we're a bit in trouble is the voicelessness of nursing. We are so many, and yet we hear that nurses are often silenced, their influence is not commensurate with their numbers. We know that nursing is the largest healthcare professional, and the statistics vary depending upon the context, but nurses often outnumber doctors 6 to 1, and Gallup poll after Gallup poll has found that nurses are the most trusted professionals, and yet we are nowhere at the decision-making tables, nor have the influence in the healthcare system that we should. Now, a third indicator, I think it's my third, indicator that there's something amiss in nursing is the nurses focus more on medicine than on nursing. If you look at nursing and medicine as two overlapping circles, A being nursing's independent function, in which nurses are the only ones that have the knowledge and skills that could carry out nursing, and C being the area of practice that only doctors could carry because they have the knowledge and skill, that overlapping gray circle represents an incredible foray into medicine. I don't think medicine is going into nursing and practicing nursing to the same extent that nursing is going in and practicing medicine. And I once wrote an editorial called "The Shortage of Nurses, The Shortage of Nursing." Now, this point was really driven home to me last month when I was in China and I was giving a talk. And I was giving a talk on strengths-based leadership that was needed to promote, to foster and create strengths-based care. So after my talk, I'm talking about all these lovely ideas, the speaker that followed was from the Stanford Medical Center. And the title of her talk was, yes, just what you're saying, the overactive bladder. And what she talked about was how she focused on, what she did in taking a medical history, how she medically treated the overactive bladder, and this is what she considered nursing to be. Well, that didn't go over very big with me. There's another alternative, and where we move those concentric circles and give nurses more time to practice nursing. So in this vision of nursing, I see nurses as focus, their focus is nursing. The blue is the overlapping function. We will always have a role to play in medicine and be tethered to medicine because that's part of our mandate. But in this depiction of the interrelationship between the two roles, nursing has a distinct role to play in the area of health promotion and healing. Because I always say once doctors have finished diagnosing and treating, who's putting Humpty Dumpty back together again? And that's the role of nurses. And so rather than having the overactive bladder, strengths-based nursing would be talking about the person dealing with the overactive bladder. She would be looking at, she would be looking at the person who is living with the effects of an overactive bladder instead of taking a medical history, in the process of getting to know her patient, in the process of clinical conversations, she would be listening for, observing for, and asking about what the person's concerns are with having an overactive bladder, how she's been trying to deal with it, what has worked, what has not worked, what she has discovered, what makes it worse, what makes it better. The nurse would also understand innate mechanisms of healing and would try to support those. She would be devising a plan with that patient in terms of creating conditions that would allow the patient, the person, to take more control over the situation, and thus empowering her to find solutions that fit her reality rather than a nurse's reality. Now, another indicator that there is a problem with the system is that we are currently in a system that is dominated by deficit and problem-based thinking. Everything is filtered through the lens of a deficit problem-based lens. It looks at the chain and sees not how strong the chain is and how intact the chain is, but it looks for that one area that is missing. Or it begins to look at what problems need fixing. Now, what's the problem with the deficit model? It works very well for depending upon what it is trying to solve. So when a patient comes to a doctor and wants to know what's wrong with their, why they have this certain complaint or this certain system, you do want the doctor to take a very close look at what is not working. But the problem with the deficit message is that when things do not work out, there's a tendency to blame, criticize, and label even normal as pathological. And there is a term that I have come across in the literature that really captures what it engenders in patients, engenders fear, uncertainty, and denial, and often resulting in patients feeling disempowered, distressed, despair, demoralized, and often leaving practitioners at a dead end once all the things have been tried and nothing has worked, where to go next. And the last indicator that I'm going to talk about that something's amiss is that we do function in silos. Our education system functions separately from our practice setting, and our leaderships often don't know or can enact certain policies. So we often have students who have been educated with a certain framework, a certain set of ideas, coming into a clinical setting in which these ideas are nowhere to be found. And so that we have a silo functioning system not enhancing each other's mission. Okay, so let's talk about some hope now. Let's talk about creating a new future. And here we have choices to make. We can either stay in the same lane and try to do more of the same, or we can veer lanes, switch lanes, and try to create a new future. And I am suggesting that we don't have to totally throw out the baby with the bathwater, but we do have to start thinking about a new future. And part of that new future, in my vision, would be strengths-based nursing. Now, strengths-based nursing, many of you know, think of strengths-based nursing as the plan of care, nurses working with strengths rather than deficits. It's making a long list of people's strengths, and then whenever you see them, commending them on their strengths. This is part of the ideas, but this is not the idea. Strengths-based nursing now is a total package. It's a mindset. It's a set of beliefs, and it's a set of values. It has language that is quite accessible, and it's a way of being and a way of behaving in whatever role you are taking on, and that applies to being a parent, or one of my books will be Strengths-Based Parenting, having spoken to my son recently. So what strengths-based nursing is, it's really a total package that comprises all these things. It's an umbrella term, and I'm going to go through some of the ideas in this in a moment. And strengths-based, this idea of strengths-based is not something just in nursing. This is the first book that has ever been written to talk about strengths-based as it applies to health and healing. But we're seeing this rejection or this correction of the deficit model in other fields such as psychology, counseling, even law. Because why is strengths-based having such a wide appeal? Because it's built on a different set of values. Rather than being built on FUD, fear, uncertainty, and denial, it's built on principles of empowerment, helping people to take charge of their lives and their future, finding multiple solutions to problems that fit them, and engendering hope. Now, one can recognize a strengths-based person, somebody who embodies strengths-based values. These people, you could recognize, there could be nurses, educators, leaders. They're magnets. Because why are they magnets? They're magnets because they exude positive energy. They have a curiosity of wanting to know and wanting to learn. They have all the C's. They're incredibly compassionate. They're committed to what they're doing, feel passionate about what they're doing. They have courage. They are competent. They're humble because they're open to understanding new ways of doing things. They know their values that are driving them. They're very aware of their values. They have integrity. And no is not part of the vocabulary. You never hear them say no. You hear them say, let me see this, let me understand it, let me create possibilities. These are the types of people we tend to like to be with. And that's why they are magnets. Now, this definition of strengths-based nursing that I'm going to give you is the definition I have today. It might be different tomorrow, but fundamentally, it is what I believe strengths-based nursing is. It is an approach that involves creating conditions that bring forth the best in that person to maximize their level of functioning and their personhood, to promote health, which is becoming, and to facilitate healing. Now, if we look at strengths-based nursing, we don't call it strengths-based nursing care as the book is called, it can apply to any number of areas. It could apply to practice, education, leadership, and research. I don't have research down because the slide wouldn't allow me to make it, so for all those, I apologize. What changes is the role? So if it's practice, the role is the nurse who is practicing. Her unit of concern is the patient and client, and what she's trying to do is create environments that are health-promoting and healing. If it's the leader, then we're talking about directors, managers, head nurses, and her focus, or his focus, is the staff nurse. And this is taking place in agencies, and what they're trying to do is create healthy workplace environments, and educators are trying to create healthy teaching learning environments that bring out the best, maximize functioning, and recognize the uniqueness of each person. So let me go through a few core ideas and what I call strengths-based move. I'm now getting into this thing is looking at something and saying, oh my goodness, that's a strengths-based move. That's a strengths-based move. So I have 10 ideas that I want to go through with you. The first idea is that strengths-based nursing is a value-driven approach that guides action. And these are the values. If you understand the values and you look at them and you practice and you deliberately try to use them, then you have what I call strengths-based. Then you're practicing strengths-based nursing. At the core is health and healing, and health as a way of becoming and creating wholeness, because we have capacities for health. We are all wired for health, and it's creating conditions that allow for those capacities to function to its optimum or to develop to the optimum. And healing is about restoring wholeness. Around those values, that's the first strong value, is the notion of uniqueness. It begins with the concept that everyone is a unique individual, every unit is unique, every student is unique, and it's up to us to figure out and to discover that uniqueness. It is about holism. It is about seeing the whole and seeing how parts in the whole are interconnected and relate one to another. Now, the whole keeps changing and the parts keep changing. So at one point, the unit can be the whole in that hospital, but the unit is only part of a program of a hospital and is only part of the institution. That institution then becomes only a part of a wider healthcare system. So we have to keep understanding the interconnectedness about the whole. And in the human being, we know that people function as whole individuals without separation. Everything affects everything. The other aspect is that we recognize that everyone has their own subjective reality and they created meaning, and it is their reality, their meaning, that affects or directs their behavior. Fourth value is that the person and environment are integral, because the environment shapes the person shapes the environment. It's very hard to dissociate or to disconnect them. That's why creating environments are so important to health and healing. A fifth value is the belief in self-determination. People have the right to make choices and can be helped to make choices, and this is part of helping them take control over their lives. We know that everything has a learning, timing, and readiness component, and it's understanding that everything is potentially changes a person because of the experience, and that we have to be cognizant of the timing when something happens and the person's readiness to enact upon change. And the last value is collaborative partnership, and that has to do with the nature of the relationship that we form with our patients, with our staff, and one that is a respectful partnership that each recognizes what the other has to bring. Now, there is a 100-page chapter written on this, and each of these could have been a chapter onto themselves. But this becomes what's known as strengths-based nursing. It's not about the lists. It's about this. The second idea is that we need to break down silos to maximize effects. And it's recognizing that systems are interconnected, and in order for transformation to take place, we need to have synergy that is created amongst all our nursing enterprises, whether it's practice, education, or leadership. So when our students come into an area, a new area, that there is a practice setting that subscribes to the same values so that they can actually see and understand how this operates in practice. Or that leadership subscribes to the same, so that staff feel that this is how the world operates. So when there is value congruency and value consistency, in other words, all enterprises adopt the same values, although the expression might be very different, they each reinforce each other, and this strengthens the ability to get things to have some traction. Because we do know that people learn and people develop their frameworks by what they observe, what they see in any of their interactions. Who they see and who they model, and whether they want to be just like that person or they don't want to be like that person. And when they see people who walk the walk and also walk the talk, they walk the talk. In other words, what they say, they actually do. And these are your authentic people. And it was when this happens that people are more likely to understand and believe and buy into this. And the other thing is they have to experience it. So when they're treated with respect, the likelihood that they will treat patients with respect increases. When they are treated with disrespect, then you cannot expect them to care for patients in a compassionate, caring way. And so I have some mantra questions that one should be carrying around in their head. And we have to be asking ourselves, when you get into any situation, how do I create health-promoting environments, be it in the classroom, be it with patients, be it with my staff? How do I work with or develop the person's strengths to assist them to achieve their goals and to maximize their functioning and their personhood? Which strengths-based values are operating and guiding my actions here? And finally, what I'm doing, how does this contribute to health or healing? Now, another idea is that we need to start using the right tool to accomplish the job. And as my friend Patricia Benner will say, we are all detectives. We are all involved in investigative work. We are all presented with problems or concerns, and we need to figure out how the pieces of the puzzle fits together. Now, the dominant method of inquiry has been the medical model, with its deductive model, with hypothesis testing and ruling out competing diagnoses. And so, when medicine's mandate and social contract is diagnosis and treatment, The medical model works very well because it was developed specifically for that. Now, when nursing's mandate is health and healing, we're still using the same model. So we have a bit of a problem. We're basically using the wrong tool to understand and put the problems that come to us together. And so I would say that what we need is a new model, and strengths-based nursing is the model that will help us with that inquiry. Here's another idea that I, on my way to Australia this year, in the magazine I had, I noticed this little quote. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. It's not what you look at that matters, it's what you see. And so I want to tell you the story of Gillian Taylor, who is featured in chapter one in the book, and I want to just share with you why what she sees is quite different than what other people see. So Nurse Gillian Taylor tells the story of Sarah, who suffered from a severe debilitating form of juvenile arthritis, previously misdiagnosed, that left her unable to walk and of her 20-year-old single mother. Gillian first met Sarah and her family when Sarah was just 2.5 years old, and she told me, if I drew a genogram of this family and wrote some of the facts about this family on paper, any person would say, what a disaster and what misery. The arthritis, the pain, the disability, and I would say, what resiliency and what gutsiness. Because the first thing I noticed that struck me about Sarah was her drive, her wish to do things on her own. She would scoot around on her bum, and when anybody came to help her, she would say, I can do it, don't touch me, I'll do it myself. And anyone who's had a toddler knows exactly this. And the mother would say, yes, you can, yes, you are doing it. And this could be a very, and she said, there was a lot of pain in the situation, and this could be seen as totally heartbreaking. And Gillian had just the opposite feeling coming away. So let's do a quick analysis of what makes Gillian's approach a strengths-based approach. First, she observes for health. And anyone who knows the capacity for health, one of the capacities of innate health is autonomy. We are all wired for autonomy. And so Gillian is observing this innate capacity and how it's working with Sarah. She's also looking to see Sarah's mother. Does she create environments that are health-promoting? Does she allow Sarah to exercise autonomy in an appropriate way? She's also setting the conditions for establishing trust with this mother. She neither criticizes nor comments and is totally non-judgmental and recognizes this mother's and this family and this child's incredible strengths. And if the role, and I don't know the rest of the story, but if her role is to support innate healing mechanisms, she would do something to deal with the pain and to get that inflammatory response under control. That's the medical aspects. This is in her purview, but it's to help strengthen and support the innate healing mechanisms. And that's why Gillian was a strengths-based nursing approach. Now, here's another idea I'd like to share with you. So in the face of adversity, illness or tragedy, the human spirit is revealed. I want to tell you the story of Rabbi Ronnie Kahana and his lovely wife, Karen. Rabbi Kahana is my rabbi, and 2.5 years ago, he was failed by a devastating brainstem stroke that has left him quadriplegic. And all who come into contact with him are inspired. He continues to minister to his friends and his congregants, and his disability has revealed an incredible man. It has uncovered his spirit and his personhood for all to see. And so consider how Rabbi Kahana sees his world. And this poem that he dictated by blinking his eyes was published in Time magazine. And he writes, you have to believe you're paralyzed to play the part of a quadriplegic. I don't. In my mind and in my dreams, every night I Chagall man, float over the city, twirl and swirl, with my toes kissing the floor. I know nothing about the statement of a man without motion. Everything has motion. The heart pumps, the blood races its course, the lungs culminate, the body heaves, the mouth moves, the eyes turn inside out. We never stagnate. Life triumphs up and down. What a difference if you saw this man through a deficit model. The deficits are overwhelming. The strengths are there. It's the strengths we want to work with in order to help this person maintain his personhood. The next big, small idea is that strengths and deficits coexist. We always talk about the glass being either half empty or half full. What's the truth? The truth is that the glass is both. It's both half empty and half full, and I only know if it's half empty and half full if I look at the total glass, because it's the relative amount that really just tells me what's really operating here. And so it's not about ignoring deficits, it's about dealing with both, and hopefully about dealing with strengths in order to overcome some of those deficits, or in order to contain the deficits, or in order to allow the best of that person to shine through. Another idea is that innate capacities for health and innate mechanisms of healing. We are all inborn with the capacities for survival. We are all born with capacities for health, and we're all born with capacities for innate healing. Otherwise, none of us would be here. And so we need these capacities, and we can call them strengths. They're needed for growth, they're needed for development, they're needed for repair, and they're needed for restoration, to restore the person back to wholeness. And these strengths exist. From cells to citizens to community, we need to look at the biological strengths, what's operating biologically, what are that person's biological strengths, what are that person's personhood strengths, and what are the resources in the community. And as I said, every time I read something, I filter it through a strengths-based lens. And recently I was reading the book by J.R. Moringer, who wrote The Tender Bar. It's a lovely, lovely book. And this is about him telling his story of driving through the Arizona desert with his cousin Jed. And he, as he descended into the desert, he started having this conversation with his cousin. So as we descended into the hot desert, I felt a lump in my throat. I hate cactus, I grumbled. Oh, I like them, Jed said. Know why they grow those big arms? No. He lit a Marlboro. When a cactus starts leaning to one side, he said, it grows an arm out to the other side to right itself. And when it starts tipping to the other side, it throws an arm out in the other side to the opposite side, and so on. And that's why you see them with 18 arms. A cactus is always trying to stand straight. You got to admire anything that tries that hard to keep its balance. Now, I say this is the same thing with human beings. We are always trying to right ourselves. We are always trying to correct. We all know about homeostasis. And we are all trying to see, to function the best we can. And it's those things that we need to uncover and discover to understand the role they play in that person's health. Idea number 8. I only have 10, so we're coming to the end. We have to learn how to situate people within their proper context. I'd like you to meet Dr. Rick Holtz, who's a physician in Ethiopia and has dedicated his life to caring for people in Ethiopia. Whenever he wants a consultation on one of his patients abroad, he always sends the x-ray, but along with the x-ray, he sends a picture of the child, and a picture of the child in his community, because he wants the other physician to understand that whatever he is looking at, he's not looking at a lung, he's looking at a lung that belongs to a person, a very special person, who is a very special member of a family, and he wants him to take that into account whenever he's making a recommendation. So idea number 9, we always talk about creating goodness of fit environments, and this is one of my favorite concepts and ideas about environments. We all know there are certain environments we have all thrived in, and we also know there are certain environments that we have actually wilted and have really not done very well. And so we have to ask ourselves, is there something just wrong with me, or is there something wrong with the fit between who I am and what that environment has to offer? And does this environment bring out the best in me, or does it bring out the worst in me? And recently, I was speaking to Bessie Bitsis, who's the head nurse of the palliative care unit at the Jewish General Hospital. And in fact, when I went to China, I featured her floor, and I featured Bessie, because to me, Bessie embodies strengths-based leadership. My aunt was a patient on her floor, and the care was superb. So this was just not about me liking Bessie, which I do, but it was about seeing what excellent leadership can produce. And she told me the story of a young nurse who came to her one day and said she was going to leave the palliative care unit because she did not think she had the qualities to work in palliative care. But Bessie saw her potential and asked her, "What can I do to support you, to help you grow?" And now, several years later, this nurse is still working on palliative care, and Bessie is knows this nurse, and she might even be here, so please come and say hello to me, has special talents for planning and teaching, and these are the things she likes. So Bessie arranged that this woman had time off with pay to develop courses, two day-long courses on symptom management that she not only gives to the unit, but that she gives regularly to the rest of the hospital. So Bessie knows how to create an environment that capitalizes on this woman's strengths and brings out the best where everyone is enriched because of these ideas. And the last idea, and there are many more, but these are the ones I have selected to talk to you about today, is the butterfly effect. We tend to downgrade those small effects that really have large effect size. And this story was told to me by John Marsala. He was part of a study group that I had at the Jewish, and he told this wonderful story. While he was a clinician on the floor, he started his career in cardiology, and he had prepared the patient for an angioplasty. He got the IV started, and when the patient returned from the procedure, the patient was bleeding. He got the patient's the bleeding stopped. And as his shift progressed, it lightened a bit, and he found that he had some time on his hand, and he noticed that the patient was unshaven. So he said to the patient, "Would you like a shave?" John proceeded to shave the patient. But what did the family notice when they came to visit their loved ones? The shave. "Never mind everything John has told me he had done for him medically. It was a shave," as John recalls. Quote, "It made him feel good. It restored his sense of personhood. It made his family feel good, and to see that their loved one was being so well taken care of." And head nurses have told me that the letters of appreciation they get from the patients are not about that you got the IV in straight off on the first try, but it's when nurses have taken time to talk to patients, to listen to patients, to get to know them, to understand their concerns, to teach them what they need to know. It's the relational components that really matter to patients. So just in summary, some of these ideas. Strengths-based nursing is a value-driven approach that guides actions. Transformation requires synergy amongst nurses' enterprises. We need to use the right tools to accomplish the jobs. It's not what you see that matters. And in adversity, the human spirit is revealed. So I am just very quickly going to talk about the benefits of strengths-based nursing, and then I will conclude. Nursing Strengths-based nursing gives nurses a unique contribution in the healthcare system, whereas medical's focus is diagnosis and treatment, and using the deficit model, that's very appropriate, nursing's mandate is promoting health and facilitating healing through a strengths-based approach. It enhances interdisciplinary practice because we know that interdisciplinary practice operates best when each team member brings their own unique set of skills to the table. They occupy a niche that no other profession can perform. They bring a new perspective and a different perspective to the table, and they begin to add nursing language to medical discourse. We know that strengths-based nursing, and there's lots of evidence of this, that it empowers patients, families, staff, and learners. It truly operationalizes what we mean to be person-family-focused care. It motivates people to assume greater control and responsibility over their own self-care. And we do know that when people feel in control, they have better outcomes. It enhances a feeling of self-efficacy, that the person has a confidence that they know they can achieve what they need to achieve. And a focus on strengths is a requirement for collaborative partnership. When patients believe they have something to offer to that partnership, they need to understand that they are bringing something to the partnership, and therefore they can engage and are more likely to engage in forming collaborative partners with their nurses. And believe it or not, we're starting to accumulate evidence that it makes sense. There's an economical sense to strengths-based nursing. There's been two interesting studies, a recent study by Gina Brown for the Call for Action, who did a meta-analysis of all the work of nurse-led interventions, and those nurse-led interventions that were not replacement, that did not replace medical functions, and they not only achieved better outcomes with a certain population of people, but to a considerable economic saving to the system. We also know the very famous and very well-known nurse intervention study, the New York Partnership, that has been going on for 30 years, and these incredible effects when you put a nurse there in a situation for a year and she develops a strong relationship with the patient, those effects are sustaining, not only for herself, but for her children, and it's been quite an amazing set of studies. And people believe that the effectiveness is due to the connections that nurses are able to make with these people. And finally, it empowers nurses by valuing nursing. It gives nurses a stronger identity and a greater sense of who they are and what they do is important and how they contribute uniquely to the healthcare system. They have a framework in which to frame what they do best. Now they have the framework, they could say why they do what they're doing best, and they also have a language to communicate what it is they're doing. And there's this very famous quote that, if any of you are in fashion, Alexander McQueen, the fashion designer, once said, "What you see in the work is the person himself." And so how nurses nurse is reflected in how she sees herself. It adds a sense of pride to being proud of being a nurse and proud of the work of nursing. And so I conclude, let's remind us about this statement: the further you get away from your essence, the deeper the trouble you're in. And I would like to rephrase that and say, as you say, Lori Gottlieb, 2013, the truer you are to your essence, the more likely you will be able to make a difference. And strengths-based nursing returns nursing to its essence. Thank you very much and have a wonderful day.